Germany, thank God, never told the government what to do.
I'm sitting at the table with Goldie Mayer and Herb Friedman. The meeting is about to start. You will hear various comments from her and people that are guests here this evening from all over the country.
One of the enormity of the challenge that you found here, and this is the climax of your visit, you were invited here by the Prime Minister. The things that you saw, the people you listened to, were arranged for through her office, and now the final moment, you come here to partake of her hospitality and her presence. And it isn't just a ceremonial ending where she sends you away with a thank you for having come and a wish for a good voyage back home. This is a substantive evening where hopefully all the things that you've seen and heard up to now will be tied together in your minds, impressions coalesced, opinions formed, and a challenge to some action will be left with you as the final thought, the final word. The Prime Minister has invited and you are enjoying the presence at your tables of various members of this government and various other officials. I'm not sure that I have the whole list. I went around to try to say hello to everyone. If I miss anyone, please forgive me. But there is here the Deputy Prime Minister and the Minister of Education, Mr. Yigal Allon, who is sitting right over there. He's busy and tired because school opened yesterday, and you know what that means. There are more children who went to school yesterday than there were citizens of this whole country when it was established in 1948. There is the new Minister of Interior in the government, Dr. Yosef Boer, who has the honor of being the oldest member of the government in many capacities. Right, not the oldest, only the senior. Gotta be careful with your words. There is the Justice of the Supreme Court, Mr. Justice Agranat, who is sitting here, whom some of you have discovered as having a relationship to Louisville, Kentucky, which always seems so strange to people, but not to you from Louisville, of course. There is the Secretary to the Cabinet, I think that's it, or the Secretary to the Government, I'm not sure, Michael Arnon, who many of you know when he was Consul General in New York. There is the Foreign Office is represented here tonight, although you had the Foreign Minister last night. But Mr. Gazit is sitting back in the corner there. And the Prime Minister has an advisor. She has many, many advisors. But one of her advisors is Mr. Simcha Dinitz, and I saw him somewhere before.
The advisor.
There is Simcha right there. Simcha is I think he's called the political advisor, but the title is not important. When you want to find her, you look for him. And then there's a gentleman whom I met just recently. When Mr. Dinitz was out of his office, a Mr. Mizrahi was in his office, and he is right here. And then there's one other mustachioed gentleman, old friend of many of us, Mr. Adi Yaffe, who used to be in the Prime Minister's office, and who is now what, Adi? Tell me.
Many things.
Many things. I think he'll be introduced as a member of the Knesset. That was a close shave. If I've forgotten anybody, please excuse me. There's no need whatsoever to make any introductions. Ladies and gentlemen, Prime Minister of the State of Israel.
Just as a nicety, when I say that I'm really very happy that you accepted my invitation and that you are here. Don't hold it against us if you were exploited in a terrible fashion in the last 48 hours, and I understand that you tried hard to break the ceasefire and the canal. Back with the report that I heard that the morale was very good, despite what happened to you. We're sorry, but I hope you forget about that. For Israeli to say that you have come at a very critical moment in our lives, and to learn that we're facing a very serious situation. Oh my God, how many times have you heard that? But the interesting thing is, and the important thing is, that every time you heard it, it was right. And nobody ever exaggerated when he tried at one point during the 22 years, and many, many years before, but of course I look about, I'm sure nobody of you has heard any lectures before the establishment of the state, just because you were too young. We spoke to your grandfather, not to you. And whenever we say that, it's true. And then every time we try to compare the difficulties at any given moment to the difficulties that we had known in the past, and they may be much greater and more serious and more dangerous now than they were in the past, but then we never forget to add on difficulties and problems and the danger we always have. But what is the ratio between the difficulties and our ability to meet them? What is the ratio between the greatness of the problems that we had to face in the past and our ability to solve them? And we always come to the same conclusion. No matter how difficult it is now, and problems and situations never repeat themselves, there are always new conditions and new reasons and new elements in the situation. We always come back to the same conclusion, and I think you know us by this time, we are not capable of fooling ourselves and lulling ourselves into dreams that have no connection with reality. We come back to the conclusion we are more people in the country. The country is more developed than it was in the past. There is a founder foundation. There is a better base from which we can set off to solve our problems. The Israel Defense Force has shown its ability during the last 3 years, beginning with the Six-Day War. When we accepted the ceasefire, it certainly was not because the Israel Defense Forces came to the cabinet and said to the government, well, we must tell you, please accept the ceasefire because we can't go on anymore. That wasn't the situation at all. Our army, thank God, never tells the government what to do, but we certainly listen and know, and they report, and we have been blessed not only with an army of men and women who do well and realize that the fate and the future of the people is placed directly on those young shoulders. Sometimes you look at them and you think, these are children. Have we a right to place such terrible responsibility on these shoulders? But they take it, they carry it with strength, with dignity, with faith. And you've seen some of the officers. I don't know whether you met our chief of staff or not. If you haven't met him this time, you will when we come back again. I don't
know. General Elazar,
Dado, the man that took the Golan Heights. And by the way, when as soon as the fighting was over on the Golan Heights, the first thing he did was to send a message down to the people below in the agricultural settlements that lived there despite the shelling from above. And he sent them a message saying, it's only from these heights that I see how big you are. And somebody has to know Dado closer to know how big he is. And his chief, the chief of staff, Frank Barlow, I think you would agree with me when you meet him that probably you have never met a man who says so quietly and with such modesty as some most important words with so much strength. And speaking in quietly as he does, every word he says adds to the confidence and the self-assurance of the people in Israel. Whether he speaks at the cabinet, whether he goes on television, whether he goes on radio, whether he meets the men of the press, anybody that he meets. We've been extremely fortunate that we have generations of this kind. This is not a, what do you call it, on the radio in your country? This is not a commercial. When I say that, Yigal Alon, my friend and colleague on the cabinet, was the head of Palman, and Frank Barlev was the boy from Palman, and Dado is from Palman, so these were youngsters. He doesn't look very old now, but he was younger 20 years ago or 25 years ago. And these were the children, youngsters, that carried the burden of defense problems then. And thanks to them, the foundation was laid so that we could fight the war of independence and come out as we did. And maybe I have said everything that there is really to say. I'll tell you why. When I say that Yigal Alon, when he was a youngster, was the head of the Palmach, which was the main striking force of the Haganah. But his son has already, I believe, completed now the services in the army. I'm a little bit older than Yigal Alon. So my granddaughter now is going into the army. My son and daughter were in Palmach in the Second World War. My daughter started and my son, when they were 12 years old, as messengers of the underground movement of Haganah. Now my granddaughter is going into the army. The two grandsons of my sister have gone into the army this week. Her sons were in Palma, in Haganah, in the War of Independence, the Second World War. This is the story. And maybe the only thing that we should really tell you is, what do we want? I want, and this is speaking for all of us, for the entire people, that my granddaughter, who is now 18 years old, going into the army, that her brother, who is 14 years old, will not have to go to fight 4 years from now. And that my other grandchildren who are 12 and 10 and 8 years, that I should look at them not with a heavy heart, feeling, after all, what are these boys? They're growing up to go into the army to fight. And we've learned from experience, as everybody knows, even when you win a war, not all the boys come back. And what we're really struggling for is only this, that that we can raise our children and our grandchildren feeling that they live in a secure country, where it isn't taken for granted that we must grow and bring up generation after generation, where it is almost taken for granted, but it's natural. In Israel, this is the future of every generation that is born and grows up, and this has been going on for tens of years. And when people come back and look at us through magnifying glasses, what are we and who are we and what do we really want and what do we really mean and what do we think? I don't know what people say about us. But let me say the truth. If it has any connection of what we really want and what we really think and what is it really that we're asking for, is that the people in Israel should have the right and the conditions should be created where they can live in peace, insecure, and as your president very well said, defensible borders. All this nonsense that Israel is holding back because it wants expansion of territory is either the source is either ignorance of what this is all about or viciousness. And giving a vicious interpretation to something which is natural that every people should have the basic rights to live in security and in peace. And the moment that you are visiting Israel, and the reason that I and my colleagues and my friends in the United States who are involved in this matter just as much as we are, have taken it upon ourselves to ask you from the West and the South and the East and the Middle and the Middle West, from all over the United States, to drop what you have been doing 2 or 3 days ago. Get on a plane, come here, work hard for 2 days, and then go back. I was going to say to your business, but that wouldn't be exactly the right thing. We're going back to our business, to our collective business. We have done this because in this world there's no fighting now. It's a ceasefire. And what would have thought of natural, during the ceasefire there's no shooting. And the boys can relax. And their mothers can relax. And the real national force of Israel for the last 3 years is listening to the radio. Announcements every hour, and hold your breath until you hear all our planes have landed safely. In every plane there was somebody that has a few people wondering, has the plane come back? And now it's quiet, so we ought to be happy. That's fine. And we've been told, stop shooting and begin talking. Wonderful. Talking to whom? And talking about what? And what good is the talking of people that, although they stop shooting, no sooner will have the shooting stop than they immediately, against their promises, against their commitment, immediately began to preparing the ground so that they can begin shooting under a much better condition than they did it before. So, are you surprised that we're worried, that you find us with heavy hearts, that we don't know exactly what's going to happen tomorrow, and to complain about any government, foreign government. I say we don't want to complain about the United States government, we don't have a better friend. But the other day, last week's Economist came out with a picture on the cover with a very significant question. It says, can you trust anybody, Golda? And that evening, having a speech in Israel, there was a big bounce dinner here of Americans like you. Let me the answer. And I said, yes, I trust our boys on the Suez. I trust our children on the Jordanian border that have never in their lives slept in a bed in the room. Those that are 3 years old, those that are 5 years old, 4 years old, have forgotten now how it is to sleep in a bed in the room. I trust their mothers, who despite all this haven't picked up their babies and left those villages. All those men and women and those border villages, but not a single village was evacuated, despite the constant shelling. And I said to the people, as I say to you now, and I said, I trust you. Jewish men and women all over the world worrying about what is happening to Israel, feeling that the fate of Israel is their fate, that this is not something that you're doing for somebody far away, thousands of kilometers. It is the fate and the future of the Jewish people that is being fought out on the battleground around us on our borders. And Klaus Holland asked me the day afterward, an American correspondent, CBS, I think, he said, Mrs. Mayor, yesterday you said you trust, you said whom you trust. You didn't say you trust the United States government. And I said, no, I didn't say it, but don't take it that I don't trust them, that I don't trust your president. Of course I do. But I'm not going to hide from you the truth. We walk around with a great big question mark in our hearts and in our minds. What is going to happen? Egyptians, the Arabs, have a big brother standing right behind them with all the weapons that they need or don't need. They really don't need any weapons because nobody is going to attack them. But there they are for years. During the standstill, an airlift, constant airmen bringing more and more and more sophisticated weapons. All this for one single purpose. All this against us. Begin talking, and yet they won't sit in one room with us. And we hear noises, and we hear their speeches, and we hear their statements. We haven't heard of simple, clear statement saying we are going to begin talking about a peace agreement with Israel? No. What we hear is, we want Israel, we're going to talk about one thing and one thing only. Israel must go right back to the 67 borders and the justice must be done to the Palestinian people. Now if we translate it to our simple language of experience, we're asked to go back to the 67 borders. We were there. Exactly, that's where we were in 67. But during the days of May and up to the 5th of June, on those borders, we were facing danger. And justice to the Palestinians means opening the gates of Israel for Arafat and the Fatah to come in. He can have a choice. either to destroy us from the other side of the border or from within Israel. And we should give him this choice. Is this expected of us? Or are we also going to be supported? Not in everything that we want, but one of those basic demands of ours that you recognize, supported, that nobody can decide for us what are defensible borders. We have to defend those borders. And I have no doubt whatsoever in the friendship, basic friendship, certainly the American people and the American administrations, right down the line, since the state of Israel was born. But when people speak of guarantees, when people want to convince us that borders are not so important for you, the important is, have you somebody to guarantee your borders? So I want to remind you that in 1950, out of the blue, without asking us, the United States, England, and Great Britain announced that they are guaranteeing the borders of all the countries in the Middle East. And I think it was in May of 67 when they announced that that guarantee is not in effect anymore. As a matter of fact, by May 67 we have forgotten that the announcement was made in 50 that they're guaranteeing anything. To the effect that it had on our security and on our lives, it might just as well have gone out of effect but before it was announced. In 1967, we had so-called guarantees from the UN. What happened? Nobody has the right to expect of us that we should depend upon anybody, even our very best friends. And I believe sincerely and honestly that your president is a very good friend of Israel, concerned with our security, concerned with our existence, I have no doubt. But I have no doubt whatsoever that President Johnson wanted with all his heart to avoid, to see that the war of 67 does not take place. And if he didn't do it, evidently he couldn't. And if we hadn't had the ability to defend ourselves in the war of 67, all the friendship of President Johnson that I never doubted for one moment could have saved us. So, our friends, what we expect from our friends is one, to recognize the basic demands that we make, that we cannot be without them. Two, knowing our neighbors as they know them, and they know them just as well as we do, we must be given the means with which we can defend ourselves. And three, to give us the right, the same as every other people has, to decide what is good for us. That even our best friends should not take the right to decide that for us. And we are now in a position where all of these problems are not being answered to the full. We're still working on it. We're optimists. We can't afford the luxury of pessimism. We have to be optimists. We have to look forward, we have to believe, and we do. I want to speak only on, mention one more thing. Why did we ask you to come? We want you to have the feeling, information we could bring to all your cities. But we wanted you to breathe the air of what is happening here. And if anybody has come to your cities, whether it's in Houston or Louisville, Kentucky or Seattle or Boston or wherever you come from, I'm sure you will admit, telling you about the Suez and about the Grand Trade Concern, and if you haven't been here, it doesn't mean too much. When you see it, and you see our men, and you see what's happening, I'm sure that you feel it differently. That mainly, in order that after you know and understand and felt what this is all about, we can, from this point on, work together with knowledge and information that we have now shared with you. What is it that we need? We need two things, really. We need that the friendly government of the United States should become conscious of the fact that Jews in the United States care, that this is their business, that it matters to them what happens to Israel.